Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
My name is Denise Shearer, Ground Cover vendor number 485. And my article is October 31st. October 31st is a special day of the year, not because of spooky and scary things, but because of pleasant things. It's harvest time and a time to praise God and Jesus. It's a time for treats, your favorite meals, and fun times. You can look however you want to look and be whoever you want to be on that special day. It's also very pretty and most of the time not too hot. October 31st is a good day for people of all ages, babies, children, teenagers, adults, and senior citizens. It's also a good time to decorate buildings and homes. It's a good time for movie days and movie nights, too. It's also a good time for silly artwork, silly music, and other comical things to make you laugh. I like to share candy, popcorn, and all kinds of snacks with my friends and family. It would be nice to have a party at Ground Cover on October 31st so friends can get together at Ground Cover too. Those are some good things about October 31st. It's a very beautiful day. I also did an interview with Lindsay at Ground Cover. I said, "What do you like about the month of October?" Lindsay Kalka, Ground Cover publisher, said, "The fall leaves and the cool weather and the excuse to eat lots of soup." Me, Denise, said, "How do you celebrate Halloween?" Lindsay says, "I always dress up as a French press coffee for Halloween. I wear a beret and a t-shirt from France along with my Ground Cover news press pass."
Tabitha Allman, Ground Cover vendor number 360. Shutdown hurts families like mine. I think it's absolutely crazy that just because the government is shut down, the families that count on their food stamps every month to feed their children and themselves are just out of luck. I have no idea what I'm going to do about feeding my babies. I think this government shutdown needs to end so me and thousands of other people don't have to stress about how their children will get their next meal. They already cut my food stamps for no reason months ago. I only get $650 to feed my family of four. And let me tell you, that is not easy. Just one person usually gets almost $300. But me and my family struggle month with food, and to top it off, my two-year-old is the world's pickiest eater ever. I am truly scared about what will happen if the government don't open back up soon. I just need everyone to pray that the government gets it together. Hopefully, by the time this article makes it into Ground Cover, the government will be back open and everyone was able to get their food stamps, since there are families like mine that don't have other ways to get food. Thanks for listening to me complain, everyone. Have a great day.
Lily Pastora Monterosa, UM student contributor. Journey to Justice Tour brings awareness, hope. Shock, fear, hope. Those were the emotions that many people faced when the Journey to Justice bus toured arrived at the Michigan League, University of Michigan Student Union on Friday, October 17. Run by the Unlock the Box campaign and Look to Justice, alongside local partners such as Open MI Door, a bus turn art exhibition is traveling around the nation to show the injustices people face in solitary confinement. Solitary confinement is a form of punishment where a person in jail or prison is placed in a locked room for as long as 22 hours or more a day. Many people who are in solitary confinement are denied access to family visits, recreational activities, and prison programming, leaving them alone in a jail cell that resembles an empty cage. Organizations like Unlock the Box try to raise awareness on how solitary confinement is harmful to those forced into it while working with governments to try to alleviate the issue through legislation or policy. The first part of the event focused on the decorated school bus next to the Michigan League, which was transformed into a portable museum that showcased people who faced solitary confinement and their testimonies. When I walked into the bus, the first thing I noticed was the bare bunk beds, each one cramped and featuring a thin blanket and pillow as the only means of comfort. People were able to lie in the beds while listening to an inmate's experience through a prison phone, allowing them to be immersed in the experience of someone in solitary confinement. Meanwhile, there were lockers at the back of the bus, each one showcasing a person who went through solitary confinement and giving their stories while their personal belongings were scattered around the locker itself. As I was listening to the stories, I could hear the fear from their tone and the stories, the screams of help from the inmates, the crude conditions that people faced, and the dwindling morale that people feel less and less human. These exhibits allowed participants, including myself, to understand how solitary confinement can be dehumanizing and used wrongfully in the incarceration system. While exploring the bus, I met with Hakim Crampton, the government relations liaison for Citizens for Prison Reform and a survivor of solitary confinement. After being wrongfully convicted for a murder at the age of 18, Crampton spent 15 years in prison, witnessing firsthand how solitary confinement harmed him and his peers. He said that while he had support from his family during his time in prison, many others who face the same situation do not. When you don't have anyone to turn to, there's no support. Then mental illness could even increase tenfold, Crampton said. He now shares his experience around the state in order to educate the public about the abuses that happen with solitary confinement, while encouraging them to take action in the community with the government. After the bus tour, the second part of the event was a discussion at the Michigan League. After watching some documentaries about how solitary confinement is impacting people in Michigan, there was a panel discussion with Joel Carter, who faced solitary confinement while being incarcerated. Margot Schlanger, a professor at the University of Michigan who focuses on civil rights and criminal detention, and Barbara Opawal, whose son Ben passed away due to severe conditions while being in solitary confinement. Each one gave their own perspectives and opinions and the various ways in which the issue can be tackled through local organizations and the government. This event allowed me to learn more about the staggering issue and understand how it can affect not only the person in solitary confinement, but also the families and friends of the individual. Incarceration is one of the main contributors to homelessness, and when someone is forcefully put into an environment that strips away their individuality, they can develop mental health issues that can lead to poor choices and continue in the cycle of incarceration. Event organizers stress talking about this issue with others to raise awareness while also contacting representatives to inform them to work on bills that end solitary confinement in Michigan. Survivors like Akim, grace is a crucial thing for people to give, he concluded. There's different times in our lives that we make mistakes, and should those mistakes be back-breaking, life-ending mistakes? You know, I don't think so. I think we need to have some grace. You know, forgiveness for people.
In memory of James Heed, by Will Shakespeare, Grand Cover News. James Jimmy Heed was born in 1953 at St. Vincent de Cornis Hospital in Cleveland, Ohio. He came to Mercy House, Ann Arbor House of Hospitality, for the first time for a community breakfast sometime in the winter of 2016. He told Peggy, who runs the house, that he was staying at the Delaney's Center, and when they wouldn't accept his cat to live at the shelter with him, he arranged to take the cat to the animal hospital, where he had to pay a monthly fee. Peggy and Sherry Wanda invited Jimmy to the Ann Arbor Ecumenical Event on Homelessness and Poverty at Vineyard Church, and he went. After the event, Peggy invited him to stay at Mercy House. Jimmy immediately found a contract job at the University of Michigan Hospital. He worked as a valet during the night shift from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., even throughout the coldest months of the year. Jimmy confided in Peggy his medical information after he moved in. He did not share that information with other residents at Mercy House. However, during the pandemic, we noticed he visited the hospital several times and would spend more than a week or two at the ICU. When he came out of the hospital, he revealed he had cancer. Jimmy was the kind of person that kept to himself and didn't talk very much. He was a very intelligent man, and some of the Mercy House residents teased him about how much he remembered from his high school days in Cleveland. He was living in Cleveland during the 1969 chemical fire, which sparked the environmental movement. People thought highly of Jimmy because of his generosity and kindness. During Christmas 2024, he bought about a dozen $20 gift cards, which he gave away to his friends and some homeless guests at the Mercy House Christmas party. Jimmy's death is a significant loss to the homeless community. We will continue to pray for his soul to rest in peace. Will Shakespeare, Grand Cover News, number 258. Wes from his family shared at the October 25th memorial at Mercy House. He loved beanies and flannels, so we all wore them to the memorial. Cindy Heed, Jimmy's niece. He once shared a one-bedroom apartment with 49 cats. He was the pogo stick champ of our family. Nancy Heed, sister. He liked the Bee Gees, Vanity Fair, Lobo, and Mary Hopkins. John Heed, brother. Jim fed cats and took care of his mother. He was kind and funny and gentle. He drove for a career as a cab driver and airport shuttle. Still, he will drive for fun. Tom Heed, brother. He was kind, dependable, and honest. He was never afraid to speak his mind or ask questions. He loved cars, both his own and others. Alex Heed, nephew.
Peace Be With You by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor 490. Once upon a time, Father John Nolan, who was the worker priest at St. Hilary Catholic Church in the western Detroit suburbs, offered me a room in their parish house. From 2000 to 2005, I lived there and went to Mass occasionally. Mass ended with community greetings of a kiss and the expression, Peace Be With You. I had been raised in the Pietistic Anabaptist tradition, which was still suspicious of Catholics because of the historical memory rooted in the Inquisition. How many people were burned at the stake? Father Nolan and my father, the Reverend James K. Parks, became friends in the peace and justice movement. As I moved into Cuba solidarity work in 1990, Father Nolan became an important friend and supporter. His timely invitation to live in community was an auspicious opportunity. It was a delight being in a community which believed in the peace that Jesus taught with a kiss and the words, Peace be with you. This conclusion to Mass helped to erase memories of the Inquisition which still live in the bones of Western civilization. The genocide in Palestine is the latest example of Inquisition mentality. I joined the Palestine Solidarity Vigil, which gathers at the post office by 5th and Liberty on Thursdays at 5 p.m. I chose a sign that read, Israel kills a classroom full of children every single day. American exceptionalism, the ideology of American supremacism, continues a kind of inquisition. It thrived in the neoliberal form with Ronald Reagan, advanced by Bill Clinton, and Obama represented with his great oratory on American exceptionalism. The U.S.-based war machine has supported Israeli Zionism from its beginning as a forward military base in the Middle East. In the days of apartheid, Israel and South Africa were encouraged to become nuclear powers. The war machine is globalized, and NATO has been a major player, especially after the reunification of Germany. Alan Haber has one of the best leaflets on this topic, titled End the Whole War System. He is in his 90th year, and you can meet him Friday at 6 p.m. at the weekly peace vigil by the Ann Arbor Post Office at 5th and Liberty. If you read the October 3rd ground cover news, you may have seen the Make Peace with Yourself piece. It's an introduction to the struggle for peace and justice in this phase of the American Revolution. Many of us are learning peace be with you as the greeting and parting phrase of our time. The 400 million Arabic speakers in the world use the phrase Assalamu Alaikum, many of them daily. Practice that with Arabic speakers until it flows. For veterans of Standing Rock and similar indigenous-centered awareness campaigns, that phrase is amended with, and all our relations. If you say those words to your MAGA fellow citizens, you are practicing revolutionary love, which is another article of mine in the Ground Cover Archives. As we learn to breathe the love that heals, we become mindful revolutionaries ready to do the work that is before us. Daily practice is strengthened by group practice, such as the one led by Kempo Chupel at Karuna Buddha Center at 424 South 4th Avenue on Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. May we come together and share the work that connects. I hope to see you at the Veterans for Peace Concert for Peace at the ARC Tuesday, November 11th. Peace be with you and all our relations.
Food stamps will not be distributed in November. Michigan legislators might cover the cost. By Lindsay Kalka, publisher. The federal government has been shut down since October 1st. Annually, Congress must pass legislation that decides the funding for government programs, services, and departments. If the Democrat and Republican legislators and the president cannot negotiate and agree upon the budget, the result is a stalemate and consequential shutdown. Federal workers do not get their paychecks. Non-essential government work doesn't happen, and major delays occur in administrative services. Social Security and Medicare checks will still go out, but funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, called SNAP, Food Stamps, EBT, or Bridge Card, is impacted by the federal freeze. On October 23rd, the U.S. Department of Agriculture ordered the State Departments of Health and Human Services to pause payments in November. As long as the government is shut down, the payments will be too. 42 million Americans will be at risk of losing these food benefits, nearly 13% of Michigan households. Approximately 1.4 million people receive SNAP benefits. 43% are families with children. 492,225 children participate in SNAP. 38,513 veterans participate in SNAP. 36% of SNAP households have older adults. 51% of households have a person with a disability. 78% of SNAP households include someone with earned income who is working. Earlier this year, the Trump administration's Big Beautiful Bill slashed the SNAP budget by $265 billion over 10 years, increased work requirements, and barred immigrants and refugees from receiving assistance. The federal government's delay of SNAP benefits will place Michiganders at further risk of food insecurity and poverty. SNAP, a critical program for families and individuals across Michigan to access food, is the nation's largest food assistance program and one of the most effective tools to reduce food insecurity. Michigan House of Representatives Democrats, led by Representative Tanya Myers Phillips, put forward a package of bills on Thursday, October 30th, that would put $900 million of state emergency funds into keeping SNAP benefits running through the month. Colin Jackson from Michigan Public Radio predicted, "The bills could have an uphill journey in Republican-led state House representatives. State's attorney general, including Michigan's Dana Nessel, are suing the Trump administration. Legislators are putting out formal messages in opposition, and community members are organizing to prepare for this attack on food access." In the next edition, we will follow up on this story and report on the creative ways Washtenaw County is responding. We invite readers to contribute by email to submissions@groundcovernews.com.
My name is Wayne S., Ground Cover Vendor number 615, and my article is titled "Labels Matter: Unhoused Individuals and Families." Homeless population. Such an endearing term, don't you think? But hey, what's in a name, right? These times, they are changing. Homeless population sounds so permanent that it's depressing, like we've just come to accept it as a natural part of our existence. Well, it's not. Don't tell me I'm part of a homeless population. You might like the statistical value of it, but I find it offensive and demeaning. So where do we go from here? Well, folks, it's time for us to label ourselves. I've decided that I like unhoused individuals and families. It sounds less permanent, more descriptive, less offensive, and a kinder way to be addressed. And really, any acts of kindness and terms less demeaning than homeless population makes a difference. Just like going about your business in town, you try to dress for the location and the occasion. Sometimes what you look like and sound like is as important as what you're labeled as. So folks, let's take a pause. Let's really take a good look around us and decide for ourselves who we want to be identified as. How do we wish it to be labeled? Let's take a minute and decide whether or not we wish to tackle this weighty issue.
My name is LaShawn Courtright, and I've got to rake these leaves is the poem that I'm going to be reading. I've got to rake these leaves that are all over my grass, just like the mess that people keep on bringing up from my now very distant past. I've got to rake these leaves off of my present, because people are doing way too much too fast. And some erase my worth by compensating my work as if I'm non-existent, just like my past. I've got to rake these leaves off my path, because some piles of leaves have trash in the pile. It's not my job to sort it out. I've got to rake these leaves away. They've fallen from their trees, the shade they provided, just like them was temporary. I've got to rake these leaves. Sooner or later, new ones will be expected to grow. I've got to rake these leaves and get them off my grass for show. These old leaves have just got to go. You know what I mean? You can relate, I know. I've got to rake these leaves, get them gone. I've got to rake these leaves.
What We Built by Monique Caldwell, ground cover contributor. For Sean, I love you. We built this love like a lighthouse, steady, bright, and meant to guide. Through storms, through silence, we held each other like anchors, refusing to drift. We didn't know love would find us. Two hearts worn thin, still hoping. But we built something rare, a friendship that bloomed into firelight. A love that held us steady when the world shook. We were never promised forever, but we gave each other everything true. Now the road bends, not away from love, but into different skies. We're not breaking, we're choosing to protect what we made, to walk apart so the bond stays whole. You'll always be my lighthouse, my once-in-a-lifetime calm. I'll carry us like a sacred song, not ended, just echoing in a different key.
David Putman, Sci-Fi Mentality, Our Future. Without prejudice, legal term, court costs. Court profit rates, local, state, federal, international. Social Security growth rates over time. Job opportunities, community outreach. Places of worship, uniform practices of worship doctrines. Medicine. Medical costs, profit rates, same progression as courts. Fair taxation, free lawyers, free government insurance rate by corporate interests. Daily time management, fair equality between men and women, organization mentality, organizational charity rates and regions or influence, same progression as courts, respect, public image, and sufficient work for survival of families, for lifetimes, over time, consequences of war. de-escalation of nuclear practices, environmental impact of the Industrial Revolution, a peaceful environmental revolution, financial support between NASA and the departments of local housing regions, stabilizing the economy in times of technological and medical advancement, military organizational practices for common citizens and those with abnormally high IQ rates, and discrepancies between IQ progression over time. Which of our world leaders need more help? Where and when? Which occupations do the most good versus money made over time? Taxing the 1% and American corporations, an impact of non-governmental cooperation, the future of international victories, treaties, and potential government shutdowns, servers, security on and offline, and hackers versus the system, are they breaking their own governments? Whose servers are powerful enough to correlate population expansion rates and repercussions internationally? NASA and whom? How do we abolish outdated practices lawfully and legally? Are our world leaders being ethical, and do they have a common language to communicate peace today? The answer is yes.
Gen Z Protest, written by Mike Jones, Vendor 113. The Gen Z revolution is underway. Throughout 2025, Gen Z, those born between 1997 and 2012, had led worldwide protests that have erupted across multiple countries, particularly in Africa, Asia, and South America. Using social media platforms for coordination, young people are voicing outrage over economic inequality, corruption, and failing public services. In some cases, the protests have led to the overthrow of governments. The so-called TikTok generation is leading the way for global political and social change. Key characteristics of Gen Z's activism. Digital organization. Young activists use social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram, as well as gaming applications like Discord, to organize and share information. Traditional solidarity. Although protests are often local, Gen Z's activists leverage digital tools and share symbolic, like the pictures flagged from One Piece, to create a sense of global solidarity. Online and offline action. Gen Z activism operates on a spectrum from slackism, using social media and online petitions only, meaning very little effort is expended, to traditional on-the-ground protesting. Very political engagements. Recent election results in the United States show a more complex political landscape for Gen Z than previously thought. In 2024, the U.S. elections, there was a notable shift to the right, particularly among young men. Intersectional concerns. While key issues like economic hardship and climate change drive many protests, bordering concerns about racial equality, mental health, and social justice are also at play. Recent Gen Z protest hotspots. Madagascar, a youth-led uprising over extended electricity and water cuts led to ousting of a president, Andre Rajoelina, in October 25. The protests, which also targeted governments' corruptions, were inspired by international movements and used the One Piece flag as a symbol of resistance. Morocco. A series of ongoing demonstrations began in late September 2025, organized by an anonymous collective called Gen Z 212. Protesters are demanding significant improvements in public education and healthcare, fractured by government spending on international sporting events like the 2030 FIFA World Cup instead of the public services. Nepal. In September of 2025, a large-scale anti-corruption protest, initially sparked by a ban on social media platforms, spread across the country. Frustration over corruption and government mismanagement of public funds contributed to the movement, which led to the resignation of the prime minister. Peru. In late September 2025, Gen Z protesters clashed with police over a new bill that would force young people to pay into private pension funds. The protesters reflected broader frustrations with government corruption. Other youth-led protests have taken place in Indonesia, the Philippines, and Timor-Leste. Underlying concerns fueling the protest: economic injustice and elite privilege. Flashy social media posts flaunting elites' wealth have fueled anger amongst the youth, who face limited job prospects and widening economic inequality. Corruption and authoritarianism. Protesters frequently cite systematic political corruption, democratic backsliding, and authoritarian tendencies as central grievances. Decline in living standards. A general decline in the quality of public services and rising of cost of living have prompted many young people to take to the streets. Lack of public accountability. Demonstrators are frustrated by the lack of government accountability for failing public services, mismanagement of funds, and abuse of power. Climate change. Gen Z continues to be highly concerned about the climate crisis. Activists are holding politicians and corporations accountable for their actions. Youth-focused initiatives such as Global Youth Climate Summit in 2025 are being organized to empower and mobilize young leaders in climate action. The role of social media and independent news media outlets. As indicated previously, social media platforms are a critical tool for these protests, enabling decentralization, coordination, and communication among activists. Online movements help amplify calls for change, even when governments attempt to censor or block platforms. Independent and nonprofit news media outlets like Status Quo, Democracy Now!, Al Jazeera, Ground Cover News, and many other independent news media outlets are alternative news sources utilized because of the lack of corporate media coverage on these protests and the need for reliable information. Gen Z global protests in an ever-changing world are redefining the methodology of dissent with their willingness to challenge old systematic authorities and ideologies.